Welcome to the Energizing India podcast, a program that focuses on electric mobility in India, giving a voice to this industry sector. My name is Ravin Mirchandani, and on this program, we feature conversations with key protagonists and industry leaders, creating a narrative on how to facilitate faster adoption of electric mobility in India. In this episode of our podcast, we approach the electric mobility sector from a different perspective. So far, we've had insightful conversations with original equipment manufacturers of both cars and two-wheelers, as well as CEOs of charge point operators and the electricity distribution sector in India. Today, we analyze the perspective of research and development and government policies. We speak today with Sajid Mubashir, one of the chief scientists of the Ministry of Science and Technology within the Government of India, reporting directly to the Principal Secretary for this sector, whose department and team are working on creating a roadmap for research and development in all of the sectors impacting electric mobility, including battery manufacturing, charging infrastructure, vehicle systems integration, electric components, materials, and even manufacturing. Fasten your seatbelts, ladies and gentlemen, for a lot of learnings. Sajid, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on this platform. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sajid, for the benefit of our listeners, it would help to understand what your department does to start with.
Well, this is the Department of Science and Technology. So the Government of India, it is divided into various divisions, let's say. So the science and technology, there are about three or four ministries concerned with the scientific issues. Let's say biotechnology by Department of Biotechnology, industrial research, there is a CSIR and setup. And then the residual matters, well, there is an earth sciences department. So let's say there are a few scientific departments and we need to interface externally with the country abroad, in international affairs, and then a whole lot of policy issues and what you call as a ministry function. Somebody's got to do that. So several of these departments, but the ministry functions are done by Department of Science and Technology. We also run a huge, I don't know whether to use the word huge. For me, 2,000 crores is big. I don't know what you would say. We fund that kind of money for research through one program called the Science and Engineering Research Board. We have the Technology Development Board under us. We have the Forecasting Agency, Technology Forecasting Agency. I used to be there. And then there is this core ministry. We do all of that. So I happen to be involved in the electric mobility area.
So Sajid, you're one of the principal chief scientists of the mission in India. And as you said, you've been part of the FAME policy. I have a couple of questions on that later in the program. But primarily today, what is the mission of your team in terms of electric mobility conversion in India?
I think we should say what should be ideally, because things are still falling in place. There is a difference between what is known as the FAME 1 and FAME 2. FAME 1 was kind of a pilot experimental effort. And when we did FAME 1, that was in 2015 to 2017 or so, to end of 2017, more than 2 years. It was an experimental program with not too much money, 800 crores. At that time, we said 20% of that we leave it for research and development. That would amount to something like 160 crores. But that didn't really run its course. So if you look at FAME 1, there were certain numbers we put out as the goals which we need to achieve. And there is also this thing that a program for electric mobility must take root in the country. So there are two goals: a legitimacy for this activity and stakeholder interest, and those numbers. The numbers got met in some ways. In some ways, something got criticized as well. But our second goal, that at least some one minister or politician should listen to it, that yielded something like, 200-300% result. And everybody's involved in it. This is the Niti Aayog running it, 6 different ministries running the show, and PMO takes a call in major issues. This is big. And what has happened as a process, when the departmental program under the heavy industry, it's become a government mission, like different parts of the government is looking at it. So the Ministry of Power, Ministry of Road Transport, Ministry of Heavy Industries, the Niti Aayog. So this ambition the government had for two-wheelers and three-wheelers and buses, that created the development environment. Now we need to do that. We need to figure out a way of doing this. we are still not there.
So, Sajid, you talked about the six different ministries, so many other departments that are all working to convergence on policy and regulatory frameworks for electric mobility. It's often said, if you try to design a horse by committee, you get a camel. For electric mobility in India, where does the buck stop? Who is the lead minister, ministry, or body that is coordinating the whole move from ICE technology to electric in India?
If you look at ourselves, if I look at myself, there is my brain, which is supposed to be in control. But if something, I touch something hot, my hand will move before my brain can even know, right? So most of the time, the different subsystems have their own functions. And the controlling function doesn't really initiate actions. Like, you just think about how you walk. It is not possible to tell for the brain to say exactly how to walk. The walk is an autonomous function. So six different departments function on their own. The good thing about the six different departments getting involved, it is not a problem. It is actually entrenching the program. Ministry of Power is only concerned with giving power, access to power, right? The standards agency is looking only at standards. So there is a need for coordination. For that, there is an interministerial committee, which is led by Niti Aayog. So all the policy issues, all the approval for things, you know, like people, approval in the sense, not that you need approval for every action, doesn't work that way. You have a plan and you figured out something. Now that needs a blessings and that needs money. That is analyzed through Niti Aayog. So most of the time the control is about saying a no. It's not about saying, please do it. I mean, people are doing stuff, they know, but more or less it's telling them, look, this is what is allowed, this you can't do, you know? And that's how a lot of things frame up. But incentive policy is different. It's a very conscious, deliberate effort. So 10,000 crore set aside there. There is 18,500 crore set aside for the the battery cell manufacturing. And there are many non-fiscal incentives, you know, something not very obvious, like even the green number plate and many other things like that. What we call as policy kind of interventions, they are also there. You know, you don't monetize it, but it's there as well.
Sajid, there are many countries around the world that have now agreed on a target. For example, Germany wants only electric vehicles to be sold by 2030. Sri Lanka has announced that by 2040, the entire fleet in circulation will be electric. In India, the ministry, and in fact, Minister Gadkari did come out and first have a target of 2025, which became an objective of 2030. What is your own aspiration, and what do you think is going to happen over the next 10 years in terms of conversion to electric mobility? And do you think we need a hard target that the industry can all work towards and get behind to say, well, that's it, you know, by this year, this is what's going to happen. And so we need to all fall in line and make the appropriate investments to get us there.
Yeah, so you're not talking about your company, though I'd like to still mention that your company seems to be somebody who understands technology and kind of prepare for it. So this is a very important conversation. Electric mobility is a change in technology. There's no way you can, it's just not another product. It's an entire technology getting changed. Now, if you don't recognize it, it's just not going to work. So it will take time for our industry to kind of really get it. You know, that you can't just buy battery cells and assemble and think that it'll work. You have certain things to understand there. And ensuring quality, and sometimes it can be dangerous, sometimes it can be inefficient, you lose money. Sometimes you can explode in terms of battery. So if it is, say, the overall target to 2030, this thing is going to happen. At this point of time, you might say, how many vehicles did we sell? Doesn't look, you know, but that's not the way. It may change, we may still meet the targets. Provided we are conscious that this needs to be addressed. The technologies have to suit the Indian climate and Indian use pattern, you know.
So let's talk. I like the way you answer that, Sajid, because you talked about the subcomponents that we need to bring together. That's energy storage, battery, and the power electronics componentry. Let's talk about Atmanirbharta, because, you know, it's been India's policy since independence. Frankly, we talked Swadeshi, we talked self-reliance, now we're talking Atmanirbhar. The truth of the matter is, most of the power electronics capability today rests in China, and even if we were to have the 4 gigafactory start in 2024, as has been announced, the lithium, cobalt, manganese, a significant component of this will come from South America, Australia, and China. So a rapid move to electric mobility throughout this decade doesn't change our destiny in terms of our self-reliance. How is your department working to change that?
Well, we have a plan. It has not got funded yet, but we have a very clear plan and I'll talk about it. But we also want to, technology can influence the kind of vehicles. The vehicle Tesla brings in is because the technology they bring in, right? You cannot just, anybody can just hope to do that. The big companies like BYD, who is a battery company, are making batteries which will become part of the frame. So structural batteries. So then they can make those kind of vehicles in. We have a different outlook. We have, surprisingly, we are resource constrained. It's not very clear why we are so poor in resources, because just in the neighborhood, whether it is China or Afghanistan, it says a lot of lithium, but we don't have any. But it's not that we don't have any material. We have some material. The problem is there is this thing called NMC. It's a kind of a short form for battery. You have to talk about the nickel, the cobalt, and manganese, NMC. That is a problem. So we need to go out of this track. You know, is it a very difficult thing? Well, it's as difficult as working it out. There are cobalt-free batteries are available today. It is called the lithium iron phosphate. A whole lot of things come from China. If you use that, you get rid of a whole lot of it. You get rid of nickel, you get rid of cobalt, manganese also. So lithium iron phosphate. This is one way. We can talk about certain other things. You know, there are different kind of batteries available today commercially. Like there's another one called lithium titanate oxide. India has a lot of titanium. We can use that. Or we could say, okay, why don't we work towards sodium ion battery or an aluminium ion battery? And that works, but you need to work it out. Not many people are interested in the sodium ion.
So one of the questions we had was sodium ion. In fact, our most recent podcast featured the CEO of Viridian, a company in the UK that is popularizing this technology. And as it just happens, CATL, the world's largest battery manufacturer in China, has announced that it is also releasing a sodium ion battery. Sodium ion has had a problem, as you've just raised, low energy density, which means if you're big or if you're slow, it works well. But if you're small and fast, then you likely need a different chemistry, as you said, maybe lithium iron phosphate, maybe lithium cobalt and manganese. Can we talk a little bit about energy density so that our listeners can understand from a layperson's perspective what is energy density and therefore how these chemistries work?
The importance of energy density is basically about what is the store you have of energy, so that, you know, but it quickly moves on to charging when you talk about energy density. It's a store of energy which you carry around. Now, the batteries which you have in electric vehicles, even when the battery is empty, you still have to carry around that same amount of weight. There is nothing, no reduction in that. So that's a fact. It's like a metallic heavy thing. But energy density is an ambition which every vehicle company is trying to pursue. Higher the energy density, the better. There are certain things like lithium sulfur systems, very powerful energy storage. We haven't got there yet. So we're struggling with this NMC, which today is the best energy density store. And we saw that there is a problem in the resources. It's because you want to pack your electric vehicle with 500 kilometers worth of distance. That's where the problem is. Do we drive 500 kilometers a day? Or are you kind of charging it up for the full week and never go to the charging station? Probably we are doing the latter, because charging itself is a difficult thing. Like, for example, today's paradigm of charging is that if you're going to office, that's not where you charge. You go somewhere else, you know. You may go shopping, but no, you have to go some other place, something like a petrol pump. You go there, and unlike a petrol pump, you can't get out of there fast. Your vehicle has to be parked there for an hour, and you haven't gone there. You're going for some other work. So you have to stay there for 1 hour to get the fastest charging possible, and you want to fill up for a week. We can have a different way out of it. Now, if you want to ask me that question, I can answer, but there's definitely a much easier way of handling this whole thing and having a lesser battery.
Absolutely, because the beauty of electric vehicles is that you do not need to spend time and energy getting your vehicle charged, because the charge comes to you. You can charge over 8 hours at home when you're sleeping, and you can charge over 8 hours at work when you're working. And that literally saves you, as you've just said, probably an hour or two of your life every week. So, you know, you get 50 to 52 hours a year back into your life to do something far more interesting. And clearly we see that as being the way forward. The infrastructure doesn't exist in India today yet, as in the, you know, the even the small chargers come from China, leave alone the DC fast chargers. You can go to Alibaba and buy a small charger for 22,000 rupees. It's going to work probably for 12 to 18 months, and then you're going to have to buy a new one. And the reality is Indian industry finds it difficult to compete because we don't have the scale to be able to compete with these mass Chinese manufacturers who can make something so cheap. In India, you know, the cheapest charger will be three or four times the price. So how do we change that, Sajid? What is your department doing to change the destiny of this infrastructure manufacturing in India?
There are two things we can do, and we're doing one of them. One is to work directly with the technologies. We haven't got there yet, like I said. The government attention has still not come to spending money for R&D. In fact, there is no money for R&D, which is our problem. But the other part is defining systems in a way, issuing BIS standards so that these things become possible. They were not a concern internationally. So there is a very nice thing possible. I think if you look at the European Union definition of what is a charging standard, they try to define it so that they wanted to capture the design and all of that, what you call a CCS. They wanted the entire world to be CCS. So they defined, well, there is something called normal charging and there is something called high power charging. Normal charging, it's all right, you know, but high power charging has to be CCS. This is what they tried to say. But I look at that and say, okay, normal charging, what is that? Normal charging is charging from a normal connection. And everybody has a normal connection. I can see light in your room, right? You have a normal connection with you there. It's a three-phase connection. I have it here. Now, if you start charging from that, we have a practical problem. The slab rate goes up and all of that. So what we require is an administrative regulatory intervention in the power sector, which says today the electrical connection is a consumer right. If you ask for it, nobody can deny you a connection. Now, it must become an EV owner's consumer right. You know, I think we should find a better term for it, that if you buy an EV, and you say, I need a connection in my car park, people should not be able to refuse you. This consumer right has already been put in place in France. And I think other places also more or less they're trying to do. So if that is possible, that means now you can have a connection in your garage. Well, people don't really put up things themselves, but it will be an apartment complex or things like that where you park. Because if you also want to use DC charging, you can do DC charging. At that level, whatever normal power is there, we have got the standards in place for those charging equipments. They will be inexpensive. In fact, the AC charging equipment is just 3,500 rupees, our region standard. DC charging, we still to figure out the cost. You put the three-phase connection. So that single phase can give you 7 kilowatts of power. And all these batteries are like about that range, you know. Two-wheeler is just 2 kilowatts of power. A load carrier might have a 7 kilowatt-hour battery pack. So that connection, if you provide it in DC, can actually be fast charging for those categories. And you can do it just anywhere. You can do it off a lamppost, so just anywhere, where that power is available. So you need those devices.
Yeah, absolutely, Sajid. You've talked about charging standards. You refer to charging more CCS, CCS2. And the strategy that I'm getting from you is that all of that can become irrelevant if you've got the right infrastructure within your car, because then you don't need to be reliant on fast charging. But I'm interested, in India, we have, you know, we had Bharat 001, DC 001, Tata's launch buses on the Chinese standard, GBT, Ashok Leyland's buses run on both GBT as well as CCS, JBM's buses are CCS. The cars that came out first, Mahindra, was DC 001, the Indian standard. Now they've all harmonized to CCS too. Where is this headed in India? And the reason I ask you that is because now you have two-wheelers, and two-wheelers need charging as well, and you're having some fast charging stations for two-wheelers. You know, Ather has got their own DC fast charging capability for two-wheelers. Hero Electric is setting up a whole charging station. Are you seeing a move towards an Indian standard, or do you think, like GSM, we will harmonize with the global standard, with a CCS-based standard for fast charging and something that is a derivative of that for what you've just described as a slower DC charge at various car parks?
Well, let me address the issue about the slow charging. Slow charging is not really there. There's nothing called a slow charger. It's just that you have a small charger you're carrying around. So whatever is happening now, we're still in the early stages. For example, there is no body certifying standards, equipment, charging equipment in the country, right? So if you install in CCS and CHAdeMO or a GBT, nobody is certifying in the country. People are testing it and saying, okay, it works. But we don't have a certifying agency. It is still a premature stage. Now, to certify, you need standards to certify it against. You need to test against the standard, and something is mandated, okay, against this. Our standards are, so far, were not developed well. But the BIS has now been able to do that. Well, we were under pressure. I'm in that committee. Nithya has woken up. So at this point of time, I can report a happy situation that we have developed almost all the standards required for the charging infrastructure. Now, when it gets mandated, then, what would happen is, if someone wants to put up their own kind of a charging setup, you don't get penalized, nobody's going to prevent you. But public charging stations where the government has a say, or partly funding or giving permissions, they will be according to the Indian standards published by BIS.
Okay, I'm glad you say that. So can I take from this the message that, in fact, the DC fast charge will be harmonized with the global standard CCS in India. And so whatever Indian standard we have for DC fast charge will eventually be CCS, and we're not going to be confused with the Chinese standard GBT or CHAdeMO in India.
No, there is a legitimate reason for two kinds of charging setup. It comes from the communication requirement for the charging. So you have a method of communicating through canvas. Basically, you have either Tesla method or the GBT Chinese method or the Japanese method. So we chose the Japanese method, which is called CHAdeMO. So that's a legitimate way of communicating with that. Then there is also an internet-based way, the power line communication method, which is today what you call a CCS. So these two are permitted in the country, and the standards allow that, both of them.
So does that mean that the bus manufacturers will have to move towards CCS? There's a lot of buses today running around in the Chinese standard, right? The GBT standard on electric buses that are, public transport buses. So are you forecasting that over the next 2 or 3 years, all of these will have to move to CCS?
The bus is an issue, because how can you charge a bus on a regular basis for a long time if the depot is not involved, right? Today, the depot is not involved. The bus charger is provided by the bus company. I wonder what the bus company is doing. They should be making buses rather than running buses and all of that. So it will come. So the idea is to have permanent charging installations in the depots, and that your normal CCS will not work, because normal CCS, the issue is the standards may say it can deliver a lot of power, but that gun which you use, it'll get melted in Indian temperatures at a certain, let's say about 200 ampere, 200 kilowatt, let's say, 250 kilowatt it can deliver. So we have an innovation happening in the country. We are formalizing it. We use two guns to charge the same bus. There's a little bit of technology to be worked out. We're doing that. The standard is getting written very soon. I think the next month we'll have this draft standard out. Using two CCS guns to charge a bus is going to become an Indian standard. Then a similar CCS kind of method using an overhead pantograph like you have in railways. So the bus will be an installation in the depot. It doesn't matter what bus comes there. And I don't think any other thing will be valid anymore.
So based on that, I want to ask you a question beyond lithium, because the truth is, if all of us move to electric mobility today, there's not enough lithium. You made a comment that people don't want to talk about sodium ion. And I want to probe why that is the case. And then following on from that, I want to ask you your opinion on hydrogen and where hydrogen FCEVs will play a role in India to help us be Atmanirbhar, because we can make hydrogen easily from the sun and the wind and other sources. But first up, why do you suggest that no one wants to talk about sodium ion?
In fact, the problem is not lithium. Lithium is a tradable commodity. You can purchase it. Somebody may be controlling it a little bit, but that's okay. It's the thing everybody wants, and lithium is available. What is not available is the other stuff which goes along. The cobalt and the manganese and the nickel, and they have a big problem. Cobalt hoarding is a known thing as a future, all those people talk about. So lithium, we can work with lithium for much more time. But can we do without lithium? That's also possible. But there is an expectation management involved in this. Lithium is one metal sitting out there. It's why do we don't get lithium? It's not because the earth crust doesn't have lithium. It is so reactive, it is reacted with everything. It's not available free for you. That's the whole problem. So lithium being that kind of a metal, to find an alternate for it, that is a little bit difficult, right? But there are alternatives, like you said, sodium ion. The good thing about sodium ion batteries, it will charge 5 times faster than lithium ion battery. You know that. And you know that when it charges full, it is not going to give you all that much power as lithium ion battery. But you can still work on its strength, saying if it's going to charge 5 times faster, then I need to spend less than a quarter of my time charging. But the engineers have to get it, the system people have to really kind of agree to it, to put all these charging points everywhere. Like wherever you stop, you should be able to charge for 5 minutes. It could be possible off a lamppost. Then sodium ion can really work. And it's so cheap, very, very cheap compared to lithium ion battery.
Do you think it's a question of policy or regulation that says this just must happen in the three-wheeler space?
No, the way I use the word expectation management, because two-wheeler vehicle companies are not willing to touch it. They think the customer won't like it. This is the problem. So their mindset to understand that this will charge 5 times faster. I mean, not all varieties, but that's a potential. Now, can you work with it for a taxi? It may not be good for personal transport, but a taxi person's range anxiety, taxi driver, auto worker's range anxiety is only to drop his passenger. He doesn't have any more anxiety after that, right? Once you drop a passenger, you can go charge 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Lithium ion battery will take more. Lead acid battery will take forever. So sodium ion battery has that potential. You can do that.
So Sajid, which part of the whole move to electric mobility over the next 10 years are you personally most excited about?
I think this thing about light electric vehicle is really exciting, partly because in the beginning I mentioned that a battery, even when it's empty, you still carry it around. Now, light EV doesn't need a big battery. You can actually weigh it in kilos. A scooter battery, 10 kilos is good enough. A three-wheeler battery, maybe 20 kilos or something like that, should be good enough. Because we look at battery swapping and we find this is the kind of weight of battery. Small vehicles, light vehicles, smaller battery, it really works out. The more it go, you now talk about a Tesla and a half a ton battery, a BYD bus and a 3 tons of battery. Now, the whole thing goes, it become very different. You don't get a quick payoff. But two-wheeler, three-wheeler, up to quadricycle, it's brilliant, really. And the charging costs are so nominal. It can really make sense. And we can really reach the inflection point very, very fast, provided the supply chain gets into place. So this focus is an absolutely right focus, according to me. I'm not an oracle, but I'm just saying that it seems very good, this two-wheeler, three-wheeler focus of the government and the public transport, of course. It is nowhere in the world, this kind of, it's very unique.
So the government's push has been, and you were part of it, FAME 1 and then FAME 2. FAME 2 was supposed to end in a matter of months and has now been extended. What is your impression of the success of both FAME 1 and FAME 2, and what happens beyond FAME 2?
Look, I'm a government servant and I shouldn't be saying anything. But if there is an impression that FAME 2 is going to do the job, that's not right. You know, like there is always something called a gestation period for anything. So FAME 1 was a pilot, FAME 2 is something. If there is no FAME 3, then there has to be something else. We're just getting started on it. So it's a long-term thing. The transition in China took 20 years or more, and with very serious investments in the supply chain, mainly they focused on that. That'll be the time frame we have. We can't rush this in 3 years or something like that.
Sajid, we ask this one question to most people that come on the program, and it always gives a very interesting answer. It's a frivolous question, but it always gets a pointed answer. And I'm interested to pose it to you too. From your perspective, if India needed to do one thing, just one thing, to create faster adoption of electric mobility in India, what is that one thing today?
Well, it's easy to reply saying the supply chain. One word is enough.
So you mean the supply chain for the entire industry? So it's not just battery, it's power electronics, it's vehicles, charging, grid?
No, just three things. The three components which go in there. There is the battery cell and rest will get managed. The power electronic devices, which goes inside the vehicle and the charger and all of that, those basic devices. And then the magnets for the motors, right? The three things, if you get it addressed, whether your technology or borrowed technology in any which way, that's enough. It'll just open up.
thank you very much for having made time for us on the program today. It is an absolute pleasure to hear from someone so senior in the Indian government with such great in-depth knowledge on what needs to happen for faster adoption of electric mobility in India. Thank you very much.
It's a great platform. Thank you very much. It's a great job.
I'm your host for this episode, Ravin Mirchandani. But I would not be here without the amazing Energizing India podcast team. Onkar, our podcast director and the man who makes it all happen in the end, much like a big fat grand Indian wedding, bringing together the research, data and attention to details, all in the timelines to get the next episode out on time. Sri Vikram, our podcast co-host and head of research, and Sunil, who along with me is executive producer of our program. The Energizing India podcast is an Ador Digitron production, giving a voice to the EV industry in India. If you enjoyed listening to us today, make sure to follow us on whatever platform you are listening on, whether it's Spotify, Apple iTunes, or our own portal, energizingindia.tv. Thank you very much, and see you on the next episode.